Do you or someone you love wish you had a better job? Want to be happier on your current job? Don't even have a job? Welcome to Work with Marty Nimco.
You know, the longer I've been in this career business, actually the longer I've been on this earth, the more, this is a fancy word, the more my theory of epistemology has changed, the study of knowledge. I have, my background was originally very scholarly. I wrote long things. I wrote books as long as 774 pages. I wrote a doctoral dissertation, all the rest of that stuff. But the more I spend time in the real world, the more I've become convinced that more change accrues from brevity, even down to the soundbite, the bumper sticker, the tweet, than tomes. And in that spirit, although not quite that brief, I decided to take on the following challenge. I decided to say, okay, how if I were given a total of 10 minutes, and after that somebody's going to blow my brains out, could I tell enough of real value in how to choose a career and prepare for a career in that 10 minutes? So this is my shot at it. And then I'll invite you both to comment on what I've said, as well as to call in for a workover, you know, whatever career conundrum you're facing or someone you care about, I can usually help. But here's my shot at 10 minutes. Don't take a timer out, because if I'm 10 minutes and 2 seconds, I don't want anybody blowing my brains out. Anyway, it is odd for a career counselor to say this, but it really is a major takeaway from my having been a career counselor for 30 years, 5,000 clients. I really believe that most people would be equally successful and contented in any of a number of careers. So yeah, sure, if you're detail-oriented and an introvert, no, you don't want to be in sales. If you're people-centric, you don't want to sit in front of a computer all day. But beyond such obvious ways of screening out careers, it's usually wiser to just choose something already. After more than a few weeks of exploration, and by this point in your life, you've probably spent a hell of a lot more than 2 weeks of, or a few weeks of exploration, you're hoping that somehow the career is going to descend like manna from heaven, but you're more likely to wait for Godot. That is mean waiting forever. It's akin to this analogy. If I dropped you from a top of a frigid mountain, you just sat there, you're going to die. But if you quickly picked the path down the mountain that looks the best, you'll either have picked a good path, or you quickly found out it was a dangerous one, scrambled back up to the top, or you found a good side path you couldn't have seen from the top. And as you get down off the mountain, you can get on with improving your life, in this case, starting to become expert in your career. And in fact, many of my clients, it just happened one Friday, we spent two sessions, and she was absolutely clear that she wanted to be either, she wanted to work for a nonprofit in communications specifically to address women's issues or hunger. Well, I get an email from her 2 days ago telling me that she's just accepted a permanent full-time position doing what? IT support at a corporation. And in fact, because people realize that ultimately people's satisfaction in their career is not so much dependent on whether it's cool or not, but the basics, reasonable salary, reasonable boss, reasonable coworkers, reasonable commute, etc. And especially they realize the long odds, because we do tend to have groupthink. We all want to work in fashion. We want to work in the entertainment. We want to work in sports. We want to work in the environment. We want to work in journalism, the media, etc. And so the competition is ridiculous. So my big message is, don't spend a lot of time choosing a career, because you probably, that's not going to be the key anyway. If you haven't thought of it right away already, it's probably not going to be that much better, so you're going to come up with something that much better. That said, I'm not going to say don't do anything. So I promised you in this little 10-minute segment that I was going to share with you what are keys to choosing a career expeditiously. But first, a couple of principles I believe in. First of all, cool careers are overrated. The emotional problems, the drug addictions, and the death of many celebrities are only hinting at the reality that cool careers, supposedly cool careers, often have hidden disadvantages. As I said, the competition for those careers is so fierce that salaries are often poor, unless you're Julia Roberts, and there are oodles of applicants applying for every good position. And if you beat the odds and get hired, you're often treated badly, like usually you're paid poorly as a temp or because the employer knows, or an intern. Right, getting paid zero because the employer knows there's oodles of people salivating, waiting in the wings for you for a chance for your job. And you're also always worrying that if you screw up, you can be easily replaced. And as I was implying earlier, it's ironic, but it's true, that it's easier to find career satisfaction if you choose an unpopular career, or at least a niche within a career that few top candidates would vie for. Like, for example, rather than relationship counseling, which so many of my clients and people calling the show want to do, focus on Tourette's. It's an under-the-radar niche. Instead of entertainment law, which is seen as cool, estate law. Instead of solar panel sales, software sales. Because in people's career contentment, as I mentioned, at the risk of using up more of this 10 minutes, it's just so important, that people's career contentment depends far less on a career's coolness than on its basics. Work that's only moderately difficult, ethical work, good boss, co-workers pay, commute, all that stuff. Okay, another principle I believe in. You got to treat your career choice like a suit of clothes. It's not so important to choose the right career. It's more important to tailor and accessorize it. We've all seen average outfits, but if you tailor it and accessorize it right, it works great. Most careers can be adapted to your strengths, to your weaknesses, to your preferences. For example, I chose to be a career coach because I value helping people be productive, but I don't like that the typical counselor spends most of the time listening and asking questions. My best strength is coming up with ideas. So I tailored the career of career counselor to fit my strengths. I also enjoy an audience, which is why I'm doing this radio program. So career counselor was only a moderate fit, but it really works really well for me because I adapted it to fit me, and that's true for you too. So spend less time worrying about the career and more time tailoring and accessorizing it. Be honest about your self-employment potential. Wanting to be your own boss is what so many of my clients say is far from enough. You can only consider, in my judgment, consider self-employment only if you're a good practical problem solver, you're good at and care about buying low and selling high, but ethically. There's people who have a nose for it, yet there are some people with MBAs who don't have a clue about how to get stuff for free, like free rent or free using of somebody's heavy equipment or whatever while it's not being used in the middle of the night. They don't even think that way. You've also got to be somebody who, unlike me, people tend to say yes to you. My wife, everybody wants to say yes to my wife. The way she, it's her personality. It's in her whatever it is. It's in her DNA. And importantly, you can't be a procrastinator. Time is money. And if you procrastinate, you're going to do a crappy job of the work you do and you'll run out of time. Time's money. Run out of money, that is. But if you do meet those requirements, focusing on the positive, do consider self-employment because ever more hiring is going to be part-time temp with race to the bottom pay and the specter ever looming of your job being automated or offshored. Okay, one more principle and then I'm going to talk about a fast way to choose a career. Consider a career tweak. If you're already in a career, consider a career tweak rather than a career change. It's much easier to get your job description changed to replace tasks you do poorly with tasks you do well than to get a new career. It's easier to upgrade your skills, maybe get better at time management or your hard skills in computers, than to change careers. It's a lot easier to change your boss and an individual workplace and do a radical career change. Why? Because you need the time. If you're trying to change careers, you need the time and ability to retrain. You need to be able to afford the lost income during your training and in your first job or jobs in the new career. And perhaps most difficult, you need to be able to convince an employer that it's worth hiring you, who's a newbie, over experienced candidates. And ironically, as I implied earlier, many career changes aren't any happier in their new career. They bring their issues with them, their poor reasoning skills, their procrastination, their difficult personality. Okay, now to the explicit tactics of a fast way of choosing a career. Here is a list of careers that have interested a significant subset of my clients. And for each of them, or most of them, I'm going to mention an under-the-radar niche that may be worth investigating that is going to be less competitive. Okay, accountant. Specialize in helping people in a particular profession, like physicians or solo practice lawyers or group practice alternative health providers. Administrative assistant? Not a bad, there certainly are a lot of jobs in that. Being a niche within that is court clerk, because there's going to be a lot more job security in the government than anything else, or a personal assistant to a rich person. What I call allied medical professions, not doctor, which I really have found over the, I've come to conclude that the profession, especially moving forward, is going to have too many disadvantages to justify the long, expensive training, but physician assistant, patient advocate, nurse anesthetist, surgical technologist. analyst is another career, whether it be a program evaluator focusing on risk management, emphasizing compensation, focusing on compensation, employee benefits. Those are under the radar niches. Attorney, many, many unhappy attorneys, but there are some niches that tend to lead to greater happiness. Bankruptcy attorney, because it's you're helping people get fresh starts, taking advantage of giveaways from the employer. Adoption law, tax law, because it's so in demand and as such, it tends to pay very well because you're going to save your clients so much money. Estate tax, estate law, being a hearing officer or being a judge. More careers, audiologist. Bus or train inspector, if you're a blue-collar person, being somebody who works for BART or for East Bay Transit, whatever, AC Transit, inspecting buses and trains can be very rewarding. Being a college administrator, to me, there is no more pleasant work environment than a college campus, especially being in student affairs or housing, you won't need a PhD. Court reporter, especially with ever more requirements that there be closed captioning for the hearing impaired, as well as, on TV, court reporter, in the courts or use, as I said, using being hired by the media. Crane operator, they get paid six figures. It's tough to get in, but pretty nice job, and you're less likely to break your back, and it's one of the blue-collar careers that you're not likely to break your back so much. By the way, I would have had my brains blown off by now. It's 10 minutes. But I'm going to continue this. The foolish consistency is the hobgoblin of little minds, as Emerson said. Or is it Longfellow? I think it was Emerson. So more careers that I think are useful. Especially the under-the-radar niches. Dentist, orthodontist, periodontist, or reconstructive dentist are great little neat niches. By the way, the purpose I'm reading this is ask yourself whether you or someone you love might want to investigate this, and I'll talk about how to intelligently and quickly investigate them in just a couple minutes. Another blue-collar one. I'm doing this in alphabetical order deliberately to avoid any perception of bias. Elevator technician. There's a specialty within elevator tech. They make, I'm not going to talk about going. It's a career that has its ups and downs. That's the worst pun in the world. But there's a niche within elevator technician called an adjuster who makes sure that it's going up and down at the right speed and stopping exactly at the right place and so on and so forth. Neat niche. Nobody graduates thinking about doing that. It's an under-the-radar niche that pays well. In the engineering space, electronic engineer, engineers who specialize in gadgets of various sorts, industrial gadgets, commercial gadgets, materials engineer, nanomaterials are getting ever more advanced, nuclear engineer, there's still this terrible anti-nuclear bias, but it's the ultimate source of clean energy. Solar and wind are great, but all the physicists acknowledge that it's only going to represent a small component of the energy mix. And oil, we have a tremendous antipathy to oil and fracking and the rest of it. Nuclear, smaller, safer nuclear is probably going to be a niche. Again, it's under the radar, less competition, but likely will be part of the future. Event planner. Many of my clients want to be event planners, and one of the best niches in that is planning events for professional conferences and conventions and for fundraising events. Speaking of that, fundraiser. Money is the lifeblood of nonprofits, and a great niche within that that is a little more foreboding for many people, but is where the money really is in planned giving. There's a lot of expertise in knowing the art of both. What are the different ways of planned giving? People in there, who are older, who want to leave money to the charity. There's a lot of legal ins and outs about how to do it well, and that's useful, as well as the gift, of course, about the very touchy subject of getting older people to donate a lot of money. But there is a real niche, especially for people who are very nonprofit-oriented, no question. Genetic counselor. That field is evolving. I've touted it for many years, but now it's moving to the area of personalized medicine, where there are individualized treatments based on your genome that they now can do. I know that here they're starting even new kinds of cancer treatments that are based on your individual genome. So being a genetic counselor is a very under the radar but great potential career. Haircutter, I've long touted this. The neat niche there is house calls. There are many people as they get older. Or in assisted living facilities, who are not going to make it to drive to or take public transit to the hair cutter. So coming to them is a neat niche for hair cutting. Handy person, people are repairing rather than replacing, because while the unemployment rate is officially low, the middle class is getting hollowed out, and therefore people are not buying as much. So whether you're repairing cars or things around your house or apartment, a handy person is always going to be in demand. imaging technologist. Medical imaging is not ever better because there's better microscopy and better resolution at the nano level. So being an MRI tech, a sonography tech, there's going to be ever better technologies, imaging technologists, under the radar career. Land surveyor, for somebody who likes to be outdoors. Landscape architect. Librarian. The niche there is special libraries, not public libraries, but corporate libraries, university libraries, medical libraries, or music libraries. People don't realize that, whether it be Pandora or Spotify, they all have librarians that work for them. Loan officer. The niche there is loan underwriting, the art of using software to figure out whether, there's a lot of concern about racism in lending, redlining, and all the rest of it. So increasingly they're using software, which is colorblind, to try to pick whether a person is or a business is worthy of a loan. Managers and executives. Some people really enjoy that. It's very popular among my clients. Again, I encourage going not to the obvious that so many people want, the environment, entertainment, those companies, but less sexy careers where it may be easy to get to non-negotiables. Being a mediator, very tough to get a job, but it is something that many people want to do, and especially if you are a psychologist or a lawyer, if you can find a little niche within mediation. As I'd mentioned once on this show before, I had a client who was simply a clinical social worker, and she had a friend who was higher up in the post office, and as you know, there's a lot of disputes among postal workers, and so she ended up getting a job as a mediator in postal worker disputes. Occupational therapist, that's helping people very often who've had strokes or whatever to regain function. A real niche within that is aging in place. Ever more people don't want to age in a nursing home or assisted living. There are occupational therapists that help people who've had strokes or whatever to age in place. Optometrist. I'm going to just go more quickly now. Personal coach, specializing in career, money, dating, life, or wellness. Pharmacist, specializing either in a hospital pharmacy or research pharmacy. Being a grant proposal writer, that's a huge source of the way nonprofits get their money. So writing those grant proposals, again, if you follow the money, you're more likely to make a decent living. Being a psychologist who specializes, under the radar, white-collar felons. I know somebody who did commit a white-collar felony and desperately wanted somebody to deal with his guilt as well as help him move forward. A psychologist specializes in anger issues, a real problem. School psychologist, because it's mandated by law, special ed services take priority over almost every other kind of education spending, and so the school psychologist is an important part of it. Eating disorder specialist, again, not your general relationship psychologist, because there's one under every rock here in the Bay Area, but these under-the-radar niches can be very helpful. If you're a sales type, it's important to try to do high-profit items. Under-the-radar include boats, aircraft, venues. So believe it or not, arenas and stadiums get sold. Government property gets bought and sold. Being an expert at buying and selling government property. Self-employment, a couple of the under-radar niche. Industrial maintenance, something you never think about, but the companies pay a lot, and it's very high importance to them. Being an operator of a child care center. Doing something I like, grungy businesses, because, again, they're not popular. Being a business that runs a toxic waste disposal business. I know somebody who leased railroad cars to get rid of toxic waste. Those are the kind of self-employment, not opening yet another food truck that's likely to make serious money without ethical compromise. Social worker. There are niches within that that I like. Parole officer. Adoption specialist. Being a teacher, very tough in many situations. Some of the better niches are English as a second language educator, a teacher, which is going to definitely burgeon with comprehensive immigration reform after Hillary gets elected. Being a health educator, working for a Kaiser Permanente, being a corporate trainer, or being a tutor, which many people find very rewarding, but if you don't need benefits. And finally, a veterinarian. Now, let's say you've now found one or more careers worthy at least of a bit of investigation, either one of these I mentioned or something else. In earlier years, I would have suggested you try to informational interview people or job shadow people in your target profession, but I'm less likely to do that now. People are ever busier, and unless they know you well, they're likely to ignore your request or say no. And if only because of that, job seekers tend to, at most, do one informational interview. And there's too much variation within a field and in how an individual practitioner would describe their career to make one or two informational interviews worth the effort. Of course, if you know somebody you respect in the field, ask for an informational interview or a job shadow. But don't kill yourself to get those. Today, I more often encourage my clients to Google your target career, like, for example, the word eating disorders in career, to find articles and videos. My clients seem to learn a lot, understand we're a visual human being, we're a visual species. We learn a lot from the videos. And then next, find good places to get trained in locations you're willing to live. Very few people in the Bay Area are willing to live in Arkansas. So think about the areas most people here in the Bay Area would like to. They would mind living in Austin, Texas, and Madison, Wisconsin, and Ann Arbor, Michigan, and maybe New York, less likely L.A. Think about the place you're willing to live. Then Google the name of your career and perhaps your planned specialization and the word training, or visit the website of the professional association for that career, like, for example, the American Psychological Association, and see if it lists accredited training programs. Or look at LinkedIn profiles of people in your proposed field. Their profiles should list where they trained. Look for commonalities. Then visit training programs' websites to see if the course requirements and the electives are enticing, and if there is a professor you might like as an advisor. And if a particular school's program appeals, Google that and the word reviews. And then finally, if you can, visit the campus, including sitting in on one of the program's advanced classes. That allows you to ask nearly graduated students what they think of the program and what the employment prospects are. And once you're in the program, tailor it to fit you by choosing a well-suited advisor who's going to both give you a lot of knowledge as well as open career doors, and by asking to do papers, projects, fieldwork that are going to prepare you for that niche. You do that, and you will have done a lot to help ensure your career contentment. So it ended up taking me 20 minutes. So my mea culpa, I thought I could do it in 10, but I was wrong. But now, I welcome your comments about my world's shortest course, if you will, on choosing and preparing for a career, as well as your personal question, your problem. I call them workovers. If you or someone you care about has got a work-related problem, like you don't know what you want to be when you grow up, or you're having a problem on the job, I'd welcome hearing from you. The phone number for a workover here at KALW and Work with Marty Nemko, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. And we already do have a call calls on the line, so I'll just wait a moment before I launch into something else. And then we'll take the call. We're not quite ready for you yet. I think what I'll do is while I'm waiting, I will. I'm just going to offer a couple. I like to tweet. I feel again, as I was saying at the top of the show, I think that brevity is underrated. And I guess we do have the caller on the line now. We have calls on the line. Okay, great. So let's go to the phones. I'll do the tweets later. Maybe not today, some other time. That was just a filler. Anyway, welcome to Work with Marty Nemko. It's your turn on the air. How can I help?
Hi, Marty. That was a really great list that you read. I was trying to write down the information as you spoke. I was wondering if you just would be posting that on your website for us to review.
The stuff is around in various places. Let's see. Why don't you email me and I'll send it to you and anybody else who wants my notes in preparation for this.
Okay, great. Okay. And your email is on your website?
Well, I'll give it to you. I don't mind giving it out. It's M Nemko. M as in Mary. N as in Nancy, E M as in Mary, K O at Comcast.net.
Okay, thank you so much. That was so informative.
I do my best. Thanks a lot for calling.
Great show. Thanks.
Take care. Let's go back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko. It's your turn on the air. How can I help? Hello. Are you there? Are you there? It's your turn. Last shot. Okay, the person is gone. We'll just wait another moment, and I think we'll go to the next line in just a moment. Just waiting to make that happen. Okay. Let's welcome to Work with Marty Nemko. It's your turn on the air. How can I help you? Hello.
Hi. Is that me?
Yes.
Ah. Yes. My question is related to my daughter. Mm-hmm. She'll be finishing college in December. Mm-hmm. she's talking about wanting to become an attorney, and specifically a judge. Mm-hmm. She has a minor learning disability, which makes it a little hard for her to take tests. She doesn't get very good scores on tests. So I'm concerned about the best way for her to go forward with this.
Okay. And let me ask the foundational question. Why does she want to be an attorney?
Well, she's particularly interested in helping people around adoption, child issues, things like that.
So why would she do something like the law, which is so long and where a learning disability is likely to be a minus? And probably with her low scores on tests and learning disability, she'll probably get into a third-tier law school, which is not the best launch pad for being a judge, and it's a decades-long path. Why wouldn't she, if her interest is in adoption and children, why wouldn't she get involved, for example, let's say as a social worker specializing in adoption? Why wouldn't she go that route, which is less, you know, just wouldn't maximize her weaknesses so much?
Yeah, I understand. She seems to be pretty stubborn about not being interested in social work, which I've tried to suggest to her.
I see. And similarly about the other related careers, whether it be teaching or working for Child Protective Services.
Teaching.
I'm sorry, what?
She just hates teaching. I've been trying to convince her to pay for her college debt by going and doing 4 years of teaching and get the forgiveness. But she says she won't do it.
Okay. So... And is it clear she doesn't want to start by trying to be a paralegal rather than go right to law school?
That's not quite clear. I've been trying to suggest that she think about that and doing an internship under another lawyer where, it takes more time, but it doesn't cost a fortune and will give her much better sound basis.
And there's also a really easy way to check things out without even taking the time to do all that. You know, has she looked at, for example, she visited, what city do you live in, or does she live in?
She's currently in Arcata, but she mostly lives with me in Richmond.
Okay. So if she went to the Berkeley, you know, the Bolt School of Law, and looked at the, go to the student bookstore at UC Berkeley and look at the books that are required, and maybe go on the website of Bolt Law or any law school, you know, and look at the syllabus and what's required, or maybe sit in on a law school class. That might give her a better basis for deciding whether this is the right path for her or not. That makes sense?
That's a good approach. I can see that.
Instead of a lecture, let her on her own skin. And if she ends up saying, yes, I want to do it, then she's got to try to use... all of the following techniques, assuming she's going to do that. Number one, she's got to customize her education to suit her. So she's got to
I'm sorry, my cell phone's acting up.
Yes, she's got to very carefully pick a law school that has a specialization in children's rights or whatever. And the like. She's got to choose an advisor who's well-suited. She's got to choose electives that are carefully selected. She's got to choose field work that are very much involved in the adoption and the court system space. And then if she later on down the road, being a judge, unfortunately, it is political. You know, they're either appointees or elected. So she's going to have to become a master at working the system, getting to know powerful people, getting involved in the Democrats are likely to be in charge for a long time, in my judgment, getting very involved with Democratic political operatives and making the connections so that she gets to be somebody who's selected. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay, that gives me a bunch of talking points with her, because my guess is that it's really not a well-suited job for her.
Right, sounds terrible. Right.
I don't want to be so dictatorial saying, no, you can't do that.
No, that's the typical, adolescents need to do what they need to do, not allow, or young adults need, it's the standard Ericksonian separation from parents. So that's why the best advice is to let her learn on her own skin, and it may well be that she discovers that she feels she can and should do it, and that's fine. But at least that way, without having the patriarchy shunt her down, she's ending up making her own agented decision. She has agency. You've taken nothing from her. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's what I want. I want her to develop her own choices.
Right.
But I do have experience that I somehow need to convey to her that may help her.
Yeah, that's my best shot. Let her, you know, let her put her toes in the waters. It's like when you go to Costco and they give you a sample of a meatball before they make you buy 10 pounds worth. You get to sample the meatball and you either throw it in the garbage or you eat it, or you buy 10 pounds worth. So let her try the law meatball and see if she wants to buy the whole enchilada, pardon the mixed metaphor.
Okay, so to refresh myself,
yeah.
You're suggesting attending a class, going to the bookstores.
The sequence might be easiest would be simply to start on the website.
Right.
To start on the website and on various law schools, find those that have specialization in children's issues. And then if that turns her on, then the next step would be to go to the bookstore and look at the textbooks. And then if that still sounds good, to sit in on a law school class. It's a typical law school class. And look into the same thing. You know, if paralegal, you say, is a possibility, let her do the parallel, those things regarding paralegal careers. Make sense?
Yeah.
She does
excellently in her classes. It's just she doesn't take tests very well.
Yeah. Well, she also, if she's in Arcata, I'm guessing she went to Humboldt.
Yes, correct.
Right. And so graduates of Humboldt who don't take tests very well and who have a learning disability that might come out in her essay or recommendations or whatever, you know, are not getting into Harvard. They're probably getting into Golden Gate or Cal Western or whatever, and that ain't the most likely path to, you know, very desirable employment, let alone being a judge. So that's why she needs to do some investigating.
It's certainly changed since Governor Brown's, the original Governor Brown, Pat Brown, night school. So.
You had mentioned something in passing that I assumed you know, but my engineer wanted to make sure you understood it. You had talked about the fact you can, quote, intern with a lawyer you can prepare to take the bar without going to law school. I know you mentioned it's not really an internship. It's a 7-year apprenticeship with a bar passed lawyer. And then if that lawyer approves, then she's able to take the bar exam. If she doesn't do well in exams, the California bar has the lowest pass rate in the country. It's 44%. And so, you know, your own worries about this path are shared by me.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
Thanks for calling Work
Thank
with Marty
so
Nemko.
Much.
Yep.
Appreciate your help.
Okay.
Some talking points.
Great. Okay. Back to the phones. We've got a lot of lines lit up. Welcome to the show. It's your turn on the air. How can I help you?
Is it me?
It is.
Oh, great. Hey, Marty. Thanks for taking my call.
My pleasure.
So, I'm a product executive. I work in software, and I'm looking to change companies. The challenge I'm faced with presently is that. I'm a young executive, just 3 years. My company was acquired. I founded a software company. It was acquired, stepped into the product management position, built the product management team, kind of reached the ceiling in terms of what I'm learning. And I know that I want to start my own business eventually. I'm not there yet, but I would first, like to develop some of my own professional skills, programming in particular, which I've already started on the path on. Two, I want to secure a job that kind of allows for more of this personal development. I've been basically with my head to the grindstone for the past 6 years, have enjoyed the work I've been doing, but want to take some time to kind of knowledge up. So my question to you is, would it be very detrimental for my resume if I decided to step into more of an individual contributor type position where I could take more personal time, perhaps as just a standard line product manager or maybe a senior product manager or a director of product management.
I think if you're trying to eventually run your own business, it seems to me the most logical way to kind of skill up, if you would be to find a larger company that's going to be more likely to give you the time and space to do a lot of professional development, has great professional development going on there. You work for another startup or as an individual contributor, largely programming. Well, running your own business, generally, you know, it's foolish to be the technocrat. I remember I was speaking with, I don't remember who it was, but somebody who told me something that stayed with me for many years. You can always hire a techno expertise for $75 an hour. It is not who has spent 20 years becoming a master, a rock star at it. The smart business person who wants to run his own business is the glue. The person who's got the ability to convince people to work for them for stock or for nothing or for low salary, who are great people, the ability to smell out who a really good person is, the ability to inspire them, the ability to convince lenders to lend them money, whether it be angels or banks or whatever. It's not learning the programming. You can always hire that out. So if you really want to skill up, why not try to get as much of a leadership position you can at a company that has a really solid leadership development program? Learn that, make that your intermediate step, and then coterminous with doing that, figure out what really is the business you want to start that's going to really add a lot of value and have a lot of low risk associated. In the software space, you know, I really have one of my many core beliefs is that it is foolish to try to compete in such a demanding arena. It's like, why box in for the in the in the, why play football in the National Football League? The metaphor is not good, but why play in a league where you're likely to get beaten up when you can make a plenty good enough living in something more under the radar? Where, you know, unlike in software, where the smartest people in the world work in this Bay Area, in the Silicon Valley software space, why not run your business in something under the radar that's grungy, that's necessary, that's offshore proof, that's where the competition is less? And my examples of that is whatever, you know, it's like running a sandblasting business or an industrial part maintenance business or something where you're going to be competing with lesser lights and therefore but still feel like you're providing a useful service, making good money and being the boss.
Yeah, well, software is all I know. I've been raised in it, and I like I said, I already built and sold a successful startup. So I want to do that again. Not quite yet.
Okay.
I do appreciate the advice. Now I have a question related to the suggestion you gave. Mm-hmm. Now, if I were to approach a larger company, mm-hmm. would you recommend preparing a more executive style resume,
sure.
or would you recommend preparing more of a? Because, you know, there's a big format difference, as you know. What would you recommend if I'm looking for the highest leadership position that
yeah.
I can possibly
get? Yeah, certainly make, you know, tailor your resume to the goal. But I think more important, most employers think resumes are full of BS. And so that's not what's going to get you in, especially, you know, your leadership experience is going to seem wafer thin. So what you want to do is two things. Yes, you want to make the best possible case you can legitimately make based on your previous experience. But whenever somebody is trying to make a move to something new, you've got to project them. If your past is not going to be an excellent indicator that, oh, this person's going to be a great leader, you've got to project forward. And that can mean one or both of the following two things. Number one, writing a piece of collateral material that says my philosophy of project management leadership or whatever it is, you know, being a director of new product development or whatever, and then you list some really smart, thoughtful ideas that both come from you as well as you're reviewing the literature. That's one piece that lets them project about you into the future rather than simply relying on your past, that is your resume. And two, getting your most respected people who know you to tout you and say, this is a guy who is, right now he's a diamond in the rough. You're getting him at the right time. He's ready to assume great leadership. He doesn't have that experience, but this is you can get him a lot cheaper now than you're going to be able to get him 3 years from now. If you get respected people to make that statement about you, that's your maximum chance of getting that as leaderly a position as you can reasonably get. Does that make sense?
That makes sense.
Okay.
Great. Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thanks for calling Work with Marty Nemco. Again, plenty of lines lighted up, so I'm not going to be about the phone number. Back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco. It's your turn on the air. How can I help?
Hello. Am I on the air?
You are.
Okay. I'm an independent trainer and consultant specializing in managing the multicultural workforce in high tech and also helping foreign-born engineers to be effective in the high tech
right.
workplace and to advance their careers.
Yeah, so you've called before, haven't you?
Yes, I have.
Yeah, I remember you. So, you know, the latest and greatest around that is I was reading the Harvard Business Review this month, the July-August issue,
right.
and it had an 18-page review of the literature that says that net, diversity training makes things worse. I won't go into details, but bottom line, this has gotten a lot of press. It's widely said. It creates a lot. I'll just say it creates a lot of ill will and ultimately not a lot of improvement. And I think I may have...
I did read that article, Marty.
Okay, good.
I did read it, and they what specifically they said, this is not my question for you, but what was specifically they said that anti-bias training creates a lot of ill will.
Right, correct.
They exempted cross-cultural training, which is not trying to get rid of anybody's bias. It's trying to teach awareness, skills, knowledge, so you can work with people from other...
You know what? There is a very gray area. It's beyond my expertise to get into the fine points of that. I'm just saying there is a growing... And if you Google the term diversity training, you will see a ton of articles that are... let's just say raising questions about that being the wisest approach. So in my professional judgment, and I think I remember saying this to you the last time, your smartest niche is exactly what you said. We are, for a variety of reasons, many of the engineers that we have are from other countries, and they do indeed need to learn both language and culture, how to better adapt to the American Silicon Valley workplace. I think that is, if that really is, you know, you mentioned that as your skill, that's what I would focus on.
That's what I am focusing on. That's what I wanted to ask you about.
Okay, good. Go ahead and ask.
I've been working the field of cross-cultural training for about 30 years. Last 5 years, I've been teaching a class at a local university in the Graduate School of Engineering, specifically for foreign-born engineers.
Right.
You still there?
Yeah, I'm listening very carefully.
And, I just wanted to run one idea by you very quickly. There are a lot of these for-profit, small technical schools mm-hmm. in Silicon Valley, and my sense is that they have a tremendous amount of foreign-born students.
Correct.
What would be the best way to approach these for-profit schools that have the foreign-born students? Should I emphasize that this is going to be good for their business? They can attract more foreign-born if they have a class like the one that I'm teaching?
I would do two things. First, to demonstrate your abilities, I would have video. Video tells, in the area of training, video tells all. I would have video of you one-on-one as well as in groups working with those engineers and showing how effective you are in helping them gain progress in both their linguistic skills as well as their cultural competency. And second of all, I would review the literature on the efficacy of making a difference in creating more effective people, whether there's a research literature, and maybe if you can't come up with enough of a research literature, certainly testimonials from your satisfied clients. That would be the package. I might also mention that might help you in recruiting students. But, of course, you want to be sure there are some of these for-profits, and maybe I'm just too much a victim of the media messaging. But the media messaging is that the for-profits are bad, the non-profits are good. I don't like to paint with such a broad brush. But before you work for anybody, do make sure that it's a university that is not just one of those that does a bad job of training, like I hear Donald Trump's was, and just takes people's money, but it really is quite reputable and does a good job. That's my best advice.
Okay, very good. And again, going back to the original thing, I am an expert in this area, and the main article in the Harvard Business Review made a distinction between anti-bias.
Yeah, you said that already. So I'm gonna at the risk, so we don't continue on this repetition for the benefit of my listeners, I will thank you for the call. Let's go back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko. It's your turn on the air. How can I help? Hello, it's you. Are you there? Last shot. You're not there? Next line. Welcome to Work With Marty. I'll give out the phone number again. If you or someone you care about has got a work-related problem, we've got just a few minutes left. I probably could get to your call, though. The phone number here at Work With Marty Nemko and KALW, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Now let's go back to the phones. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind? Are you there?
Oh. Yes, I am.
Hi.
I have a quick question. I have been a personal assistant over the past 10 years, mm-hmm. and I've had fantastic clients helping them, for multiple years. I would like to go more into the, you know, the bigger picture, the estate manager, executive assistant. And I was wondering what the best way is to go about to get into that.
Estate lawyers. You know, what happens is when somebody dies, then that whole estate process starts, and there are people who are paid administrators, state administrators, to go and administer all that. And the best source of that would be estate attorneys. I would either just network with them by writing to them, talking to them, anybody you know who knows them. Or if you're good at it, you might even try to get on. You know, there is a local association of the California Bar has what are called special interest groups, and one of them certainly is estate, and they have a local chapter here in the Bay Area, and you could see if, you know, they're always looking for speakers. If you would sound like you bring a very unusual perspective into that. If you would give a little talk about the lessons you've learned about dealing with those situations, that might be a great way to show your stuff and get referrals.
And what about if I don't want to go into the whole lawyer situation and I just want to keep it more on a personal level? I was thinking about more certificates in terms of event planning, and then I have some landscape architecture experience, interior design experience. Would that be something that I just gather a whole bunch of expertise in different areas, accounting and so on and so forth, and then put it all together, and then it would make me more desirable for clients?
I'm a little confused. I thought maybe I misheard you. I thought at the beginning of the call you said you wanted to continue working with estates and seniors or whatever, but more
no.
broadly. What am I? You were a personal
no.
assistant. Tell me, let me
yes.
clarify again for me, would you?
Sorry, yes. So I've been a personal assistant over
right.
the past 10 years, but I have noticed that I like more the aspect of going into planning events for my clients, doing travel arrangements, things like that. But I'd like to be more of a, I guess it's called an estate manager, someone who really takes care of the estates, not on the lawyer, basis, but it's more a personalized expertise, I guess. Does that make sense?
I think what I'm hearing you say is it's still working for individuals.
Yes.
And the word estate, you weren't referring to a person's legal estate. You were talking about their mansion or their...
Correct.
That's where I got confused about the word estate. Okay. And so that doesn't sound like career change. It just sounds like a ratcheting up of the responsibilities.
Exactly.
Okay.
It's stepping it up a notch and basically getting a higher paycheck.
Okay.
That's really what it is.
Now, obviously, personal assistants get paid, don't get hired by answering ads. Normally, it is, you know, people who are very wealthy do not trust strangers.
Mm-hmm.
Or coming over the transom. So your best route is you've done this for 10 years. Are your current clients very strong advocates for you? Do they think you're great?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So what I would do in this particular case, I would simply have you, well, you may have you already, have you asked each of your clients, you know, who you're perhaps not currently working for, unless the current client is willing to, you know, the really good boss encourages their employees to go and rise higher. Have you spoken to either your current as well as past bosses and say that you're ready for a greater level of responsibility, especially regarding perhaps supervising the landscaping of their estate or their or their big parties or celebrations, and whether either you can do more of that for them or whether they could refer you to perhaps some of their friends who might be in a better position to hire you for a better paying and more responsible job? Have you done that already?
No, I have not. I'm always very careful because I don't want to make them feel that I am not valuing my current position. And so I've been very careful and respectful
about
that.
Yeah, but you can't let that trap you, though. I'll role play how I would do it. Mrs. Johnson, it has been an honor and pleasure working for you. I really enjoy that I've done X, Y, and Z, and Q for you. But I feel in my own professional development that I'm ready to tackle more. I'm wondering, you know, for example, planning major events, handling the overall management of your estate. I don't mean your estate money. I mean your estate property. Are you either in a position to give me more of that responsibility, or refer me perhaps, at least on a part-time basis, to work for somebody else who might? You see how that allows them to save face. You feel very grateful. And, of course, you can you can do that with your past employers, not just the one you're currently working for. Does that make sense?
That's true. Yes, absolutely. But also, in terms of just gaining more expertise in areas that I don't have any expertise yet, which is sort of accounting. I haven't done much.
I wouldn't go that route. Accounting is all, you know, it takes people, for example, the average person, it takes 5 to 7 years to get a CPA, 3 or 4 years or full time to become an accountant. You want to learn some basic bookkeeping, fine, take a course in QuickBooks. You know, a quick, either online course or in person, depending on your personality, or some people are self-study types. They simply get a copy of QuickBooks, which is really cheap, $50 or whatever, and then learn it on your own. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense, and that sounds really good. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Okay, back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco. It's your turn on the air. How can I help?
Hi, I have a problem on the job.
Okay.
I'm a web producer at a private institution, and I'm unhappy with my job. I'm actively looking for new jobs, but I'm looking for strategies to get along better with my managers while I'm still there. So the culture there is they don't respond too well to initiative. They want people to, you know, follow orders and just do exactly the assignment is asked, not more or less. I'm certain that my manager is threatened by me when I display initiative. He doesn't get back to me when he's supposed to review my assignments, and then it puts my projects behind.
What would he say if he were on the phone now and not you? And because I've never, you know, in the end, most, well, I'll just... If I said to him, if he were in a private room with me, and I say, you know, there's this worker who says that she's frustrated and she's looking to leave because you don't respond to her, and she just wants you to be a, you know, she doesn't want you to take initiative. She says you don't want her to take initiative, and just she wants you to be a kind of a robot. You want her to be a robot, just doing whatever she's told. What would he say? That's right. That's me. I don't like to respond to her. I want her to be a robot. No, I don't want her to take initiative. What would he say? Would he agree with that, or would he disagree?
I think he would disagree. I think he would say, I totally slipped my mind. You know, I meant to get back to you. Whatever. You know, it's not a big deal. He has said that before to me.
What do you mean it's not a big deal? If I am you and you are him, and I say to you, let's make up his first name. We'll call him Matthew. Matthew, thanks for taking the time to meet with me. As you know, I've informally mentioned a number of times I got some concerns. I would like to not have to leave my current job, but I've got some things I'm unhappy with. I don't feel like I'm... I feel like there's more I can contribute. I have these initiatives that I think are really smart, and you haven't gotten back to me. And you say, it's no big deal, but for me it is a big deal. And I'm wondering, Matt, what you think. Where do we go from here, Matt? What would he say?
I don't know, and that's a question I've had. Is it okay for me to say to him, I don't know how to address the issue. I've noticed that you want to approve all of my assignments, but when I send things to you, a lot of times you don't get back to me, or you don't get back to me promptly.
Yep. Well, there.
And I'm not
sure
if I can say that to my manager.
It's all a matter of how you say. Of course, there's always a risk in anything, and you know, as long as you, unless you're a, you know, good little doobie, just do whatever you're told. You know, that's the only safe thing. But then you guarantee that you are being subverted. So the key, the best, you know, the calculus, the algorithmic limit, the calculus limit, the middle ground, is to be very tactful and be face saving. So it's a matter of, you know, Matt, I certainly understand you're under a lot of pressure. There's a lot of things going on. I'm excited about some initiatives, and you haven't gotten back to me on them. And I really would like to get a response on these. Can we go over these three initiatives that I'd like to do? And you can either say yay or nay, either by phone or email or in person, whatever you think. That enables him to save face. You're not saying he's a slacker and irresponsible and blowing you off. You're just basically telling him that you understand how much pressure he's under, and that way your risk is fairly minimal.
Right.
And despite the fact you want to get out of there anyway, so if he blows you off even after you're tactful like that, then that's just more impetus to get out of there. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense.
Okay.
But, you know, there's a project I want ownership over. He doesn't want me to have ownership over, but he drops the ball all the time. And every time it happens, I feel so frustrated.
Well, then
it wouldn't happen if I was in charge of it, because I'm good.
You can't have everything you want in life. So you've got two choices. You can certainly want to take charge of it, but if he said no to you three times, even if he's dropped the ball, that's just something, you know, there are things I want that I can't necessarily get. So you say,
I don't want to be in the position where I am managing him, where he consistently doesn't get back to me, and so remind him.
Then you must, I want you to have agency. Those are your choices. You make a good faith effort one time or as many times as you want to, quote, manage him or whatever. And if at what point the powerful person at some point says, this is an oil well that is not worth drilling anymore, it's a dry hole, I am going to reallocate my resources elsewhere. You don't just stay frustrated. You say, okay, I am the CEO of my own life. I have made a decision. I'm going to try one more time with this guy, and if it doesn't work, I'm going to reallocate my efforts elsewhere, either within your current job or elsewhere. But sitting there frustrated is human, and I fully understand it. I get frustrated too, believe me. But at least my job here is to present what may be the best way to proceed, which is decide if you spend enough efforts on him, and either say, I've spent enough, or you make one more effort, but don't. Sitting there and stewing accomplishes nothing. Does that make sense?
That makes sense.
Okay. Thanks a lot for calling Work with Marty Nemko. I got time for one more call, and I want to take it because I want to make the most of for you. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko. It's your turn on the air. How can I help?
Hi. Am I on the air?
You are.
Hi, Marty. I'm 25 years old, and I graduated from school 3 years ago. And right now, I'm kind of working at a bank in an entry-level position, and I just want to get to the next level and develop professionally.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
Okay. There's so many levels one can go in a bank. So for the interest of time, because we have very little time, mm-hmm. I'm going to tick off a bunch. Which of these would you like to move to? Being a branch manager, being an analyst, being in sales, selling either to high net worth individuals, managing projects, being involved in IT, marketing, PR, where?
So initially I was interested in going towards analysis, the analyst role, mm-hmm. but because my expertise is not, it was more general, or my education was more general, I don't see that as happening. So I'm thinking more either managerial, IT, or not even IT, actually just managerial probably.
Okay, question. Now, sometimes I don't want you at 25 to be enslaved and chained to something that is not naturally you. If there was a God, would God say that you are better, your natural gifts, forget about the undergraduate liberal arts education,
mm-hmm.
Are you better suited to be an analyst or be a manager? What would God say?
Manager, probably.
Okay, great. And so the things you need to do is you need to both accentuate to both work on the substantive side as well as the networking side. On the substantive side, it would not hurt you at all to be Googling articles on management training or leadership, or reading some of those articles in a very efficient way, then maybe taking a couple of webinars. With that knowledge in tow, then start networking with either your boss or your boss's boss, or go to public events or training events where higher level people might be, and ask for what you want. Let your desires be known. My clock is run out. I don't have any more time, but I wanted to give you what I could.
Appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Bye.
That is Work with Marty Nemko for this week. I want to thank my board operator, Joanne Marr, and of course all of you for listening and calling in. Please join me again next Sunday at 11. I will do workovers on callers with my wife, Barbara Nemko. We'll debate your work-life questions, and we'll no doubt be arguing with each other a bit. Or you can email me your questions in advance. We're going to try that. Email me at mnemko@comcast.net with your work-life question. mnemko@comcast.net. Until next Sunday, this is Marty Nemko reminding you that we find comfort among those who agree with us, growth among those who don't.